Hello everyone. We are here today to talk with Claudia Vedepol, who is the archivist at the Barbers Archive. And here we're talking about the Barbers Institute Archive. Welcome, Claudia. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. It's nice to see you here.
Thank you. Yeah, me too. Thanks for your time. So if we may start, the first thing that I would like to know is what is the Barbers Institute Archives arrangement? Is there one particular?
Yes, it's a difficult question because there is not an overriding arrangement for everything. The core of the collection, of course, is the A.B. Barber collection, the collection of his papers and his correspondences. But it's an institutional archive, so we also hold papers of other scholars who were affiliated with the Institute and the Institute's administrative records. So every collection has a bit of its own structure. But since we're talking about Warburg, I can say yes, there is certainly an arrangement, and it's more or less chronological. But we have separated his working papers from his correspondences. And the correspondences are a collection in itself, and they start with AB's first letter, so to say. And in theory, they run on to the current day, but there isn't that much in terms of paper letters anymore. So it has been a little bit petering out in the 2000s, mm-hmm. in the age of emails. Mm-hmm. And his correspondence collection is, again, cataloged in a chronological way. No, I should say in an alphabetical and chronological way. So all his letters are separated from his papers. And his papers are also arranged roughly in a chronological manner. But there are the papers. We also hold personal papers. So working papers is just a term. But we also hold certificates, diaries. Things are really of a much more personal nature. And they are a little bit separate, but his everything which is roughly connected to his academic work, it starts with his earliest work, which of course, no, there is a little bit before his doctoral dissertation, but in general, it starts with his university studies, which lead to the doctoral dissertation, and it ends with the Bilder Atlas Memo Sühne and the editorial work on the Atlas, which is also recorded in documents we hold.
Oh, I see. And do you keep having new documents or?
We do, but not Warburgs, of course. We get offered collections, of course. People are keen to have the estates of their parents or grandparents being looked after in an institution which is publicly funded, so to have a sort of safeguard for the future. We cannot take everything, so the criterion is a little bit if that person, the estate, has a clear connection to this institute. And most of the scholars whose estates we hold have been staff members or quite closely affiliated in some other ways with the Institute. So we have we're actually just cataloging a collection which came to us very almost before the lockdown in early 2019. But these are the papers of a philosopher, Charles Schmidt, who was a staff member here.
Oh, that's great. Well, good luck with that.
Yes.
I imagine it's a lot.
Yeah, and of course people want to see more the older stuff, so to speak. We have to wait until these other collections, until scholars will start to get interested in the sort of more recent works.
I see, of course. And again, talking about the arrangement, were Abby or Gertrude Bink aware that other scholars would use Warburg's archive for research?
I would clearly say no, because A.B. Warburg didn't think of anybody sort of to go through his papers as they were. He was clear-minded that he wanted to get everything out, that he wanted to publish his work and basically renew art history with his works. he was very reluctant to show anything which was unfinished. So his collection of papers was a very personal collection for him. But he kept everything because it was all part of his life's project. He went on and on to sort of develop things further on the basis of what he had already done. And if we look at the Atlas, that's the best example to show that nothing was really nothing had become irrelevant. Everything got a revival in the Atlas project, and of course it was overly ambitious. So in the end, he could not finish his last project. But that's the reason why he kept everything, and he kept it not in an archival manner. So I would say it's the Zettelkästen, maybe, about which we're going to speak perhaps, are a small archive in his archive, so in his collection of papers. But even that, and if we read Sachse, we know he kept reordering and reconfiguring all the time. Once he had a new research question, everything had to get into a new order. So there was no strict order. And it was for him alone and maybe for his closest collaborators. So. But Gertrud Bing is a bit different because she was certainly not the first archivist, but the first person who thought about the collection of papers in a manner which comes close to how we see it now, because she was... she wasn't strictly the literary executor, but the family had given her the task to be Warburg's editor, to get out his works, because so little was available at the time he died. So her first work was the two volumes of the Gesammelte Schriften, which of course we know is all published works, but why did she do it? Because all these publications were all over the place. They couldn't be read in one single volume. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was also to prepare for the Atlas, the edition of the Atlas, to get his things in his publications in one place available. And also she did a proper edition. She compiled this wonderful index, which is the best way to access these two volumes. And at the same time, this was decided really shortly after Warburg's death in 1929 that she would be the editor. And they immediately, not knowing that sort of the immigration of the Institute would happen, just 3 years later, that she immediately went on preparing the edition of the Atlas. That was the big legacy. That was what Warburg was working on and was keen to get out as soon as possible. So for that, they were aware they had to review everything, all of Warburg's works. And they went on to the job and did two things. They put them in a certain order. And that is really the basis of the order we have now. And they started employing people who typed all his notes.
Oh.
So we have got a lot of typescript, transcription of lectures, of all sorts of materials, more or less fragmented notes too, which they thought at the time would be relevant to have for the edition, because the idea was to edit the Atlas on the basis of Warburg's own words.
Oh.
And they keep using this term mosaic. So they would basically pull the strings together and find some sort of expression for every cluster and constellation on the Atlas. That is still probably a way one could do it, but it was a massively huge task, which in the end wasn't fulfilled. But to answer the question, that is really the foundation of the arrangement of his papers as they are still sort of here and now.
Basically start from zero. And
yes.
The whole job, even the paleography, right?
Yes.
Wow.
They were more, at the time, they found it easier. because everybody was still able to read the German, the old German Courant script.
I suppose.
And you can get into his handwriting and his particular way of expressing things. So it's difficult. It's much more difficult for us now than it was for them, certainly.
Oh, okay. So you say that some people were already working on some ideas to organize it, but the organization of the archive, like having a proper place in the institute, did it start with Joseph Trapp, or do you know what was the impulse to give some place to the archive?
It was, of course, before my time, but it's true. The first proper catalog was compiled by Joel Trapp and Anna-Marie Meyer. He was the retired director then, and she was the retired secretary then. They knew the works quite well, and it must have been a response to more and more demand in scholars wanting to see these papers. And that started to increase post-1970. Okay, the first compilation was in the, I think it was in the early 90s, so still 20 years later. But the interest in Warburg grew and grew over that period. And the origin of that interest, one could say, is really Ernst Gombrich's intellectual biography of Warburg, which gives a great insight into his papers because he quotes a lot from unpublished materials.
I see.
And we only had the sort of collected works until then, but Gombrich gave us, one could say, a flavor of what else is there. And he quotes a lot and gives also archive references, which are very rough and have little to do with what we have now, because these are not really catalog numbers. This is saying sort of it was all kept in the so-called Bing room, and it said like cupboard XYZ in Bing room and that box.
Oh.
So I presume by the around 1990, so many people, not that many, but people came frequently wanting to see papers. It just made things easier to have a proper catalog.
Wow.
And that is still the basis of our current catalog.
Oh, great. So if I go to the intellectual biography and I see Bing office and that,
yeah,
can I still access to the paper that is quoted there?
No, it's not. But we can, we usually know what it is, and we've got a perfect catalog now. And once we have any bit of the title of one of these papers, we can find out where it's cataloged now and give you sort of, there is a sort of concordance, but actually I now know the collection so well that I'm able to tell you, which is now the catalog number of that and that piece.
I imagine that's a huge work, because for what I see is that there have been many different ways to sort of arrange the papers throughout the years. Dorothea McKibben was an archivist, and how can you say you've done different things from her?
So she was my predecessor. She was actually the first archivist, because the archive as a department, as a sort of one of the collections of the institute, didn't really exist before. It was just these two people we just mentioned, Joel Trapp and Anna-Marie Meyer, looking after the papers and sort of dealing with everybody who wanted to come and see something. And then came money, came funding and a project, and Dorothea's big project was the cataloging of the correspondence. In the end, we had 5 different funders, and it went on for 16 years. And the result is a catalog of almost 40,000 letters being electronically cataloged with an abstract. So that was her big project. And she was always funded through that project. So that is her life, well, life as an archivist, sort of legacy here, yes. So, and I came in as an assistant. And yeah, at the time, I could see in all these years in which I've been here and then took over from her being in charge for the of the archive, how the interest in Warburg really grew and grew and got more and more international. So what we're doing nothing really extremely differently these days. I think we're a little bit more generous with access to people. To have two people here at the time, that's as many as you can basically look after, and promote the collection a little bit more, going out, and improve the catalog, so to make it even more and even better accessible. I think that's a sort of follow on from her work.
Yeah, because you talk about the letters, but as you mentioned, there are so many notes. And
yes, the catalog existed of Warburg's papers, but we've also revised it in recent years, because the more you know about him and how he worked and really know his project, the easier it is to identify things which have been cataloged wrongly or have been, for example, I discovered sort of a part of the collection which was always at the end of the catalogue under miscellaneous, because nobody knew really what it was. And through my own work, through my own research, I realized pretty quickly that this is part of the big unfinished project of around 1905 or 6, to write a major book, which Warburg called the Großes Buch, and always declared almost finished. It probably wasn't. But it's a lot of material which he materials, tables of content, and attempts to structure the materials he had collected, and already proper text. But he more or less abandoned that project once he had discovered this whole new field of astrology and astronomy. I should have said that project was really about the development of style in Florentine, in Quattrocento Florentine art, which mattered again and again, and he never abandoned that project, and it's the nucleus of the Atlas again in the 1920s. But he pushed this a little bit aside when he discovered this whole sort of, or developed his interest in the afterlife of astrology, magic, magical practices, and so on.
It's a conundrum of stuff, right? Because you talk about the way that Warburg worked as for projects. So he will have his notes, his texts, his bibliography, his pictures, you know, his photographs. Mm. So, of course, in his mind, in this project, they were all connected. Is there still, to this day, a connection between the library, the photographic collection, and the archive?
Absolutely. Because I can say it from my own research, the archive is, of course, different as a department of the Warburg Institute, because you cannot just walk in and sort of make your way through it and find whatever you need to look at. It's not an open access collection, as is the library and the photographic collection. But his books are in the library and his photographs are in the photographic collection. Although these two collections, of course, have developed further. They are tools, and they are tools to this day. Whereas the archive is sort of frozen in time, or at least Warburg's papers, in a way. But it's very exciting to go and sort of, if you dig yourself into one of his projects, and as I usually do, try to reconstruct the genesis of his ideas, and then go to the library and look at the books he used, you can find that certain things are sort of marked in the margin. Yes. You find a few marginalia, you find his original photographs, and actually the recent Atlas exhibition is the best example, because we digged out, I say we, well, not me personally, all his original photographs, which were actually the objects which were attached to the panels in 1929.
Oh.
They probably all still exist somehow. It's not clear if a few might have been lost. So I think about 85% were rediscovered and recovered from the photographic collection. But this is the stuff he had in his hands. But it was a working tool, so quite a few of them were remounted. So we restored them to get these new mounts off, to have them look as they used to look.
Yeah, good.
And then his notes came, sort of reappeared on the back of these of these photographs. That's quite nice. Often. But other scholars had written off them on them too. So these bags are proper palimpsests.
Yeah.
They reflect the history of this institute very well. Like everybody who worked with that collection used that particular photograph as a working tool, like Abe did at his time. So the three collections are very much interconnected.
Mm.
And of course the library still has the order, which was devised in Warburg's time, with a few revisions over the years. But generally it's still his library.
Yeah.
Just growing.
Yeah, that's great. And is there also a link between the archive and the Warburg House in Hamburg?
There is a natural link, of course, by simply to the fact that was the original house of the Warburg Library.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, yeah, we are in contact in a way, but not all the time. It's a funny thing maybe to mention that few scholars from all over the world write to them thinking they must have the Warburg archive, and so that's why I know the administrator there very well, because she keeps then
referring
forwarding things to me, but that's just a misunderstanding. Generally, they have, it's an empty shell in a way, or it's a shell which has been refilled with other things. It was bought by the city of Hamburg in 1992, and it was, a lot of money was invested to make it look again as it looked in the 1930s,
yeah,
or in 1926 when it was built.
Oh, okay.
So it's now it's a nice, it's really a nice location, a nice venue for small symposia, and people have their offices there who work in certain projects, and they have invested money in building a few collections in there. They even have an archive of a Warburgian scholar. But they have nothing of the original content, of course. So in a way, there is there's always a connection, but there's no
sharing
material.
Strong. Yeah.
There's no sharing in anything. Yeah, other than sometimes a collaboration, really.
I see. And just talking about the increasing material of the archive now with the Warburg's Renaissance project, do you see any changes? Perhaps a bigger room.
No, we know exactly what's going to happen. Because the project we're starting, we're going to decant, to move out in 6 months.
Oh.
The archive is one of the few departments, well, actually, the archive collection is, together with the photographic collection, are the only collections which will move out of the building, whereas the library will stay here and partly open. We will move into the newly built area in the courtyard.
Okay.
So the whole building will get a makeover, but there will be a little part completely new built. And that's going to be, in the courtyard. So we will be in what's called the lower basement, in a completely new area there, a new special collections reading room will be built, which is then shared by the archive, the photographic collection, and the rare books.
Mm.
My office will be there. My colleagues' desks will be there. There will be a few desks for sort of what we need, desks to put out our materials, sort things, and so on. There will be more readers' desks than we now have. And we will have a much better storage.
Yeah.
So what is now the common room will be our storage room. It will have much better sort of stable temperature.
Mm-hmm.
So the conditions in terms of conservation will be much better, much improved.
I see.
And it will be a named reading room. So because of funders who want sort of to see their names
nice.
in the new building. So yeah, I'm quite excited. I'm quite looking forward to seeing what that will look like and how it's all going to work out. And
that's nice. I imagine there will be even more collaboration or relation between the archive and the photographic collection, perhaps. Right?
Yes, we will see. We will see. It's now, of course, yeah, there are flaws between us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm curious.
Oh, that's great. And is there any plan for digitalizing more material?
There's nothing which I can say is a plan now which will be executed. Of course, digitization is always an option.
Mm-hmm.
We have this electronic catalog. The catalog in itself, the software, gives us the option to attach digital files to what we have already cataloged. As said, we have got the correspondence. Every letter has an abstract. The abstract is, of course, quite nice for researchers because you can do a keyword search.
Mm.
You can search every keyword and the machine sort of searches this abstract and all sorts of other metadata.
Oh.
We could attach a sort of a photo of each and every letter. There's, of course, with the correspondence, a problem of copyright because we have the rights for Warburg, but we don't have the rights for the other part. That is not a problem if these letters are so sufficiently old, because normally it's 70 years. In this country, it's 70 years plus 40 in some cases. That's one problem. But that would be the easiest, just to attach a digital file. For all other digitization projects, you really need catalogers. You need people who generate metadata.
Mm.
So we need to have more staff. Of course, you could devise a project with thinking about possibly to digitize the Zettelkästen, hundreds of thousands of individual sheets. And it needs to be devised as a feasible project.
Yeah,
so it's an option, but there's always on cost to that. We pay a lot of money for the software, which is sort of provided by a company. You pay maintenance fees.
Yeah,
so it's not just that you raise money to digitize something. You need to think a little bit further about you maintain all this digital data.
Yeah, of course.
And nowadays, like, yeah, budgets are very, very tight. So, yeah, at the moment, possibly, but not certainly. I can't tell you which part of the collection will certainly be digitized.
Of course. And it's not very difficult, right? Because of the copyrights, as you mentioned, when everything is online out there, you don't know the use that it can bring, and you want to take care of the material.
Yes. Right? Of course, the paper file will not sort of disappear. It's always sort of the original which will be maintained. Yes.
Yeah, of course. We were thinking about the wide diffusion of the material on the internet. Is that something that you think it will be like a good...
Yeah, diffusion or... Promotion,
maybe.
Of course, it's like it has been pretty clear, like COVID has made clear how much demand there is to have access to documents, not printed, like to original documents in a digital format, because people are traveling much less these days and may not be traveling as much as they used to because of, well, prices may increase. There are all sorts of reasons why. There is their precedence. It's in America. Lots of archives have been digitized and basically put online. But it's a different country. There's more private money, I suppose, around. And the challenges are really... Yeah, they are there, and I tried to sort of pronounce them just now. Long term, of course, there will not be any other way than sort of making more and more and more things available digitally. And we have to think about strategies to do that. But it's going to be a major task.
Certainly. Not for the moment, okay. So, more according to our project, the Zettelkästen, what are they? What do they hold?
So what they hold, I would say there's sort of mirror of Warburg's life work. He started, it was a typical tool of the time. So he, like, end of 19th century, that's what a scholar did, collecting sort of notes, and mainly, I wouldn't say, yeah, maybe even mainly is correct, a bibliographical note.
Yeah.
So whatever he came across, whatever title he came across, he thought, which had some sort of relation to a topic he was interested in, he was working on, he would then note on a sheet of paper and put in one of the Zettelkästen. Mm-hmm. And the collection grew and grew, and it's about 100 boxes we have now. But they very much reflect, perhaps they even reflect in their order and their titles, in their sort of sections and subsections, how Warburg sort of collected, and are still an image of what the library looked like before it was more normalized when Sachsel took over, took responsibility of the library, when the University of Hamburg was founded and Warburg's private library became a service library for the new university.
Mm-hmm.
And had to serve a much broader field.
Mm-hmm.
They would not abandon, of course, the idea of this sort of good neighborhood, good neighborliness, and the sort of strictly topographical order. But it was much more a collection according to Warburg's interests and research fields. And then Sachsel gave it a whole makeover and said, like, if we want to be a publicly used library, we have to sort of fill the gaps and basically have a broader spectrum. But the Zettelkästen, of course, remained Warburg's own collection. And so they have also notes, they have a lot of bibliographical material. But he would also put, for example, letters in there which he received on a certain topic he was interested in or he was working on. We took these letters out because now we have a complete collection of correspondence. We took them out, we put a copy of that letter in so we know where it was originally, but it now is part of the correspondence collection and can be searched, through the electronic catalogue of the correspondence.
Yes.
So, it's very much an image of Warburg's sort of research interest. But he was really struggling to find the right place for each and every sheet of paper and each and every collection of papers, because everything, of course, was interconnected for him. And to decide one single place for something and then to have, like, a sort of, a visible interconnection, I think that was really giving him pain.
How have you sorted out with that? How have you sorted those?
They are cataloged, but not every single sheet, but only everything which has a sort of, it's a caption.
Mm.
Starting with the caption on the box, and then they have little divide, like in every box there are little dividers, sort of giving this, in Warburg's terms,
mm-hmm.
sort of giving a name to the collection of sheets behind them. And as a third group, he has little folders, and sometimes I would say a few sheets or a bunch of sheets is again sort of a subsection of that section. And up to then, everything which has a sort of, is a caption, we have, it's part of our electronic catalogue, with Warburg's original terms. So you can see a rough structure of the Zettelkästen, and it helps researchers very well that they can see, this section, and then you can sort of go and look at what's really in there.
Mm, I see. Now that you describe it, it doesn't look so different from the photographic material in the photographic collection.
It's true, but the photographic collection is, of course, the order was devised post-Warburg.
Yeah.
It's very strictly iconographical. It's much more rigid than Warburg's, any system Warburg would have devised himself. Like the Atlas, it's not like, if you look at how Sachsel then sort of devised a few panels in memory of Warburg, where they were very rigid and sort of orderly, whereas Warburg's own panels look much more chaotic. And it's a bit like, I would say, the photo collection and collection of certificates.
Let's say dynamic.
Yes.
Okay. So, of course, in the certificates and as a life of Warburg, they have the information, the material from the trip to North America. That trip also has some photographs, notes, some letters, if we put it all together with just the topic. And I suppose this question is related to a former one about the problems of the use of the photograph from this trip in face of course, new discourses, no? And new things that we are living. It's photographs, which could be from the photographic collection, but of course it's Avi Warburg's life, so of course it belongs to the archive.
Mm-hmm.
Is there some kind of politics that are facing?
Yes, this is very recent, although there is a prehistory to that. So the materials, it's a bit varied. It's what he collected on his trip. So we have little sketchbooks, notebooks, everything he collected on the trip. And then there is actually a whole section also in his working papers. There is one box, a Zettelkasten, which he called Americana. The box, I think, contains more the materials from the year when he digested the trip in 1896, beginning of 97, when he really wanted to go a little bit deeper and was working on his theory of the creation of symbols, the formation of symbols. That is what he wanted to get out of his trip, of that trip, of his experiences from the native Indian culture, sort of to implement in his own theoretical work. But of course, he recorded many things. He recorded them by hand in sketches. He recorded them in little drawings and in photographs. And this has been used over the time. His so-called Snake Dance Lecture is his most famous text, possibly published posthumously. But the photographs got a little bit into the focus of the current Native Indians in North America when they were first published as a collection of his photographs in the 1990s, I think 1998, in a volume which came out in German and in English. And that sparked a discussion about the legitimacy to publish photographs which were taken partly with permissions, partly without, but which show secret rituals of the native, usually, like in his case, most of them are Hopi Indian rituals. And that this is a sort of, an intervention which had no permission, or if they had nowadays, it wouldn't have been allowed anymore, and that this is a violation of basically. Yeah, it's a sort of typical Western attitude of appropriation of something which would have been and should have stayed secret. So this dispute has a bit of a history. It started before my time here, and then it got a little bit quiet about it again, and then the whole debate was sort of got new momentum when we planned an exhibition at Boulder in Colorado, where there are Indian faculty members, and in the end the whole exhibition was called off because they disapproved of exhibiting photographs which showed ritual dances. In Warburg's case, it's his Kachina dance, which he observed and photographed. But of course there are other things. It's not just the photograph of the dancers, it's also sketches of cosmological imagery, all things. I'm not a specialist of that. But I know that there is a group of materials which is disputed.
Yeah.
Which should not be shown to a general public, which the native Indians, the indigenous people think that's their sort of secret property.
Mm-hmm.
There's both. Not everything has this status, but some things are. And Bill Sherman, who now is the director of the Institute, was sort of pushed a little bit into that debate, as there's currently an exhibition planned in Hamburg, to show like an exhibition dedicated to Warburg's American trip at the museum, which is used to be the Völkerkunde Museum in Hamburg, to which Warburg gave his collection of artifacts, so they hold them. And that collection was, yeah, the idea was to put that back into the spotlight, to make an exhibition based on that, but also show materials from the archive, from his trip, from the collection we hold. Mm-hmm. And because it's a museum, a publicly funded museum in Germany, they got in contact again with the Hopi Council and had a long debate with them, like what they would see as unproblematic and what they see as problematic. And yeah, we take it from there. We are now much, much more sort of, aware of the problem, of the issues. And at the moment, we are not selling any of these photographs for publication, for example. We're still in a debate about this. Yeah. This isn't finalized.
Yeah, I imagine. At least you have selected the ones that are really problematic.
Yeah, we know from those who were selected for the exhibition, they all got a comment from the from the Hopi Council and saying like, this is fine, this is not.
Okay.
So we know that, yes.
That is great. It's good to know, what is possible to do.
And yes, yes.
Some direction. Well, thank you very much for your time talking with us about the thank archive. You. And just one last question.
Yes.
Would you offer a recommendation for a scholar who wants to consult the material at the archive? How many days, for example?
It depends completely. That's our normal sort of service, that people who want to research, who have an idea what they like, or a project, not just an idea, project, they get in touch with me or with my colleague or through our general email if they're planning a trip. And if we have space and can accommodate somebody, everybody is who has a sort of a reasonable interest can come do research, as long as you want and can afford it. We will reserve a desk, but you cannot just come. Sometimes people come as readers of the library and think they can also consult some papers in the archive. It doesn't work like that. You have to make an appointment. So we need to know, because we need to sort of provide the service to get things out of the shelves.
And as you say, it's possible to see the catalogue online. So you have a rough idea?
That's only the correspondence catalogue. Mm. Our other catalogue is still not completely finalized. We've got it on site. Mm. So the catalogue of Warburg's papers and other catalogues of other collections. It will be sooner or later. But if you have like anybody who has an interest, and usually people come from somewhere, they know something from the literature and they know where they want to go. We also have sort of tourists who say, oh, I only want to see the archive. That's not really possible. But I'm very happy to help. Like if you say, I want to see this or that, or what do you have in that section, and so on and so on. So we have a correspondence and we figure out what's possible. So even without the catalogue being online, I think nobody had a real problem with that so far.
Great. It's good to know. Thank you very much, Claudia. It was really nice talking to you.
Okay. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Until next time.